Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Ann O'Brien. She's Director of Community Engagement with the group Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services, or otherwise known as IRIS, of New Haven, Connecticut. Ann, thank you for joining us here tonight on the eve of the July 4th holiday. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you for inviting us and caring so deeply for refugees to better understand the issues that our nation is grappling with.
So before we get into some of the urgent issues that your organization and refugees all across the country are facing right now with this Supreme Court ruling last week, tell our listeners in general the work that you do there at IRIS.
Sure. IRIS, by its name and by the symbol that the name brings to mind, is a flower. Where, if you look up IRIS, it's a symbol of hope. And what we do is we help refugees and other immigrants, but largely refugees, to restart their lives in peace and safety in the United States. We are a humanitarian organization that has a direct contract through organizations to the State Department, through our federal government, to be able to welcome persecuted people who are fleeing persecution in their home countries and have been designated as people who can resettle in the United States because they have proven that they cannot return home. Either they're fleeing persecution from ethnic issues or from political views, and they have to have a new home in another country. They can't return home. So we welcome them. We find them a safe place to live. We enroll their children in school. We help them to find jobs. And that is the most important thing that the refugees will ask us, oftentimes on the way from the airport after we pick them up. How soon can they work? They want to work, they want to live in safety, and we help them to do that and to do that with their children. So that's what IRIS is all about, is that beacon of hope and to be able to help these families that are fleeing persecution to find safety and to take care of their families here in Connecticut.
So last week, the Supreme Court issued a preliminary ruling, or I should say a temporary ruling, on the Trump administration's effort to ban travel from certain Muslim countries, six predominantly Muslim nations. And they let go forward the ban on these refugees, with the exception of refugees who were coming to the United States that had a bona fide connection to an employer, a school, or family members. And
right.
I'm sure I'm missing a lot of detail there. And so tell us in maybe some more of that detail what our listeners should know about that temporary ruling on the part of the Supreme Court and how it affects your work here in locally in New Haven.
Sure. What we see it as, honestly, is an unbearably narrow interpretation of what was provided as a possible opportunity. When they said that, you know, the entities that the refugees could, or the people traveling, could come to the United States that if they had a bona fide relationship with an entity here, we thought for certain that within that definition of an entity would include a refugee resettlement agency, because so many of the refugees, they've already been vetted, they've been screened, and they have been waiting anywhere from 6 years to longer, and they have a relationship with us. There's a word within our industry that's called an assurance. That means that we have known and have accepted these refugees, in some cases, for as long as 6 months, that we know they're coming. They have a relative here in the United States that has said they will help them to become, you know, adjusted, help them to find work here in the United States, just as any of us moving to another state within the U.S. And so when we found out that, in fact, the definition of entity would not include a refugee resettlement agency, but would, for instance, include a university where somebody was coming to give a speech from another country, that individual may not have been vetted to the extent that the folks that are refugees have been. We were dumbfounded. I mean, it's really a little odd that you could be booked to speak at a conference at a university. But if you're fleeing persecution and a refugee agency has established the relationship with you 6 months ago, that's not going to be allowed. So we were honestly, we felt we were blown away. It's been an unbelievable roller coaster. As far as impact to us, which, you know, we consider ourselves honored to work with refugees, it's more what an impact it has been to the refugees themselves. Over 50% of the refugees who have an established U.S. tie, that means there's somebody within the United States that has a long-standing relationship with them, and they were scheduled to travel, will not be considered under this narrow interpretation to have a legitimate tie to be able to come. And within those definitions, Scott, I mean, you would be amazed. It's if somebody had a tie that was an aunt or a granddaughter or a grandparent, they're not going to be allowed to come here. Now, if you're coming from a war-torn country, chances are your connections in terms of your family have been limited, that many people have passed, many people have been killed. And so the U.S.-Thai relationship, the bona fide relationships of an aunt, that's no longer considered legitimate, of a granddaughter, a niece or nephew. It's really honestly insane. For us personally at IRIS, as few as 20% of what we would have been receiving may come through in the next few months until the Supreme Court hears that case in October.
Now, so, I've heard that the state of Hawaii has challenged the Trump administration's interpretation of the exceptions for this travel ban. And I'm sure you're following that. Is there any potential that the court could redefine what the Trump administration has carved out here in terms of excluding folks like grandmothers? And I think it was initially fiancés were excluded too, right?
Right. Absolutely. You're exactly right. Fiancés were excluded initially. And so we are working very closely with the organizations that we contract with, Church World Service and Episcopal Migration Ministries, as well as IRAP, the International Refugee Assistance Project based out of New York City. We're working very closely with all of them to try to challenge this because we think it is absolutely unacceptable that the U.S., based in, you know, give us your poor, your tired, your huddled masses, it's engraved at the feet of the Statue of Liberty. But yet we're saying, no, not if it's an aunt, not if it's a grandparent. That's ridiculous. But if it's a professor who's going to give a lecture at an Ivy League institution, send them. That's not what we're about. And so we are going to challenge it because we think the U.S., believes in much stronger ideals than what has been narrowly defined by this current interpretation. So, yes, we are going to challenge it with our partners.
We're speaking with Ann O'Brien, Director of Community Engagement with Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services, otherwise known as IRIS, of New Haven, Connecticut. And, as I understood it from an article I read, there was some 150 refugees that you were expecting to work with who are coming to this region to be resettled with volunteer host families and the like. How much has this Supreme Court ruling and the Trump administration's interpretation of that ruling hampered the arrival of that group of refugees?
Well, as of right now, with the current definition, and literally, Scott, it changes from day to day. So the definition that as of, you know, this morning was that number of slightly over 150 might be reduced to as few as 40 in the next few months, which is, again, ludicrous. These people have been vetted. They've been vetted for many months, in some cases over a year. and we're simply awaiting arrival to come to be with either a family member or a close personal friend. I'll give you another statistic that I think your listeners have no idea about. There is a refugee special program for refugees, Iraqi refugees in particular, that are called an in-country priority 2. These are people that actually worked for the U.S. government, and under this narrow definition, our partner, Church World Service, will have close to 200 people who worked for the U.S. government that won't be coming through that special refugee program because they do not have a quote-unquote bona fide tie within this narrow definition. So those are the type of people that will be turned away both from our organization and from other communities throughout the U.S. The narrow interpretation of this is simply, it's just not knowledgeable in terms of how real life works in a conflict zone. Mm-hmm. They're looking at it from a political lens only within the U.S., not from a basis of reality and from a humanitarian perspective.
And what are the consequences for these families who've made, you know, probably spent many months making arrangements to take the trip here to the United States and resettle here with a host family, or I'm sure you set people up in independent apartments too, with a safety net of sorts, a social network. But what are the consequences for these families if they, at this point, are unable to travel the U.S. with this Trump administration travel ban? What challenges do they face now?
So for the families that are not able to travel and have to stay in the country where they are refugees?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
Those families, hopefully they have not sold all of their personal belongings. We hope that they hadn't taken that last step because often, Scott, that's what they have to do in order to pay for their ticket to get to the United States. It's something that most people in the United States don't understand. I know I didn't understand it before working in this industry, that in order to come to the United States, once you've been approved as a refugee, you either have to sell all of your personal belongings to pay for your ticket or you have to take out a loan so that when you arrive, you're actually in debt and having to pay for the ticket to get here. So those folks that will not be able to come for right now, if they have not had to pay for their sell their personal belongings, then they have to go back and reestablish contacts with jobs that are really jobs under the table because they're living in a country where they don't have permanent status. They're technically not allowed to work. So a lot of them work construction. A lot of them work outside the lines to be able to take care of their family and still keep everybody together. So they're going to have to go back to try to reestablish those connections to put those jobs back in place. It's really untenable what we've done to them. We've said, yes, you may come, and yes, you may make all these arrangements, and then no, you may not, and we can't tell you when. So they're having to scramble again.
And to make this real, let's take a few minutes here maybe to relate some of the stories you've heard from refugees who've made it here or you've been in touch with and know their stories. There's a lot of horrific violence and exploitation and just a level of just unimaginable pain that people go through in situations of a war refugee. But maybe tell our listeners a bit of maybe one story here that would illustrate the life and death situation for many of these people that you're working with at IRIS.
Sure. There is one individual that really comes to mind. He's incredibly brave. His name is Fuad and his wife, Azhar. They came from the Sudan, from the Nuba Mountains, and they were recently featured in the New York Times, as recently as this last Wednesday. And they were persecuted by their own government to the point at which, after Fuad's father was killed by the government, and Fuad had been tortured, they escaped the Nuba Mountains to a larger town and then were in turn run out of that town simply for being an ethnic minority in that town, and had to flee to another country, had to flee to Egypt, and try to make their own living, a living on their own, without having legal status in Egypt, simply living as a refugee. For the listeners to understand, when you're living as a refugee, you don't have a country. You're not considered a citizen of the country where you're living when you're in refugee status. So Fuad and his wife Azhar had a young child. They were able to somehow flee the Sudan and live in Egypt and make ends meet for close to 7 or 8 years before they were allowed to become accepted in the United States. Since they have been here, they are just incredibly, they will tell you that they feel like they've been born again since they moved here, that they can live in safety, that they can pursue an education, which Fuad will tell you is more valuable than anything he could ever imagine, to be able to go to school and to study, to be able to actually better his own situation. But mostly they wanted to be able to work and to take care of their daughter, Lamise. What they have been able to endure in terms of torture, watching their own father killed for nothing other than their ethnic background. And that is the only reason why his father was killed and why he was tortured. And then to flee to a larger town where they thought the government would protect them, and to again be tortured. And then they come to the United States, and honestly, it broke my heart the other night, Scott, to hear Fuad say that when he heard the things from our current administration against refugees, he began to live in fear again, thinking that in the United States it was the same situation as what he had fled from. And so I just hope that we can get through this, that the Supreme Court will hear what it needs to hear in October, and that we can get back to seeing refugees for what they are. And those are people that are good, solid people fleeing persecution for nothing they have done wrong, simply for being the people that they are in terms of their ethnicity or their political views, and to recognize that refugees are the salt of the earth. They're what this country is built upon. And that's where we need to get back to believing that our country is built upon people like Fuad and Azhar, who just want to pursue their education and take care of their family.
And there's no doubt that Donald Trump, although he didn't win the popular vote in this country, he lost by 3 million votes. The Electoral College put him over the top, and he is our president. During his campaign, he railed against refugees. He railed against terrorism and conflated the two very often in a very irresponsible way, in the view of myself. I'm sure many listening view it the same way. But there are people out there in this country who live in fear of terrorism and refugees. And they view, for not very many good reasons, refugees as somehow a threat to them. How do you handle a conversation with someone? I'm not sure how often that happens, but if you were in a conversation with someone who had that attitude, saying, you know, we shouldn't allow them in this country, they could attack us, and we just shouldn't take the risk. How do you approach that kind of attitude, which is more frequently held by people out there than we'd like to think?
The first thing I say is, I ask them where they're from. And it doesn't take long to go one or two generations back to find where their ancestral heritage began as some type of a refugee fleeing some type of a situation in their home country. And I ask them to please to just take one opportunity to meet a couple of the refugees that I have had the honor to work for and with. Whether it is the refugee family that we've resettled in our own town here in Ridgefield, whether it's the ones that have been resettled in towns throughout 50 different towns in Connecticut, I guarantee that any of those people that would just take the moment to really sit down and meet a refugee and to hear their story and to feel that resonance with an individual who they will understand from having met them that they're not here to do any harm. And that, in fact, this has been an incredibly misleading situation. It is different here in the United States. We do have incredibly strong vetting. And it is not refugees who have caused any issues, any terrorism here in the United States. And it is actually refugees who make our country stronger. They want to work. They are proud to be Americans. It's one of the things that I enjoy the most about the work I do is the refugees have shown me how to be proud again of my American heritage, not just of the countries that my ancestors came from. And so I encourage them to do that, to think back to where they came from, and then to just take 5 minutes to meet a refugee. And there hasn't been a single person that I've encountered, that after doing that hasn't said to me, what we're doing is important. What we're doing is the basis of our country.
That's certainly.
And believe me, I've been in very challenging scenarios where I've been publicly accused of endangering my own community where I live in Ridgefield. But after they have met the people that we have brought to Ridgefield, the refugees, they have known that this is what we ought to be doing and that it has gotten confused. And we have to get back to knowing this is a humanitarian issue. It is not a political issue.
Certainly a powerful response for anybody willing to listen. And I know we have some very avid listeners right now, so I'm glad you're here with us tonight. And before we say goodnight, do let our listeners know how they could learn more about IRIS, how they can assist or volunteer or in any way contribute to the efforts that you're working on in settling refugees and working this legal angle and the political angle, which are important elements right now.
Absolutely. One of the most important things that people can do is go to our website, IRISCT.org, and to go under Get Involved. They can, obviously they can donate, and we do need donations during this time. The decrease in the number of refugees has caused us to incur $250,000 budget cut in our operating funds. And so we have to rely upon people who are willing to make donations to get through this. But even more importantly is contact us through Get Involved. You can, under contact, you can find my name, either media, under media or general, and invite us to your town. Invite us to your school. Invite us to your Rotary Club, to your church. We have people from on our staff who will come speak. We will bring refugees to meet the people in your town. And they want to be able to meet people so that folks can understand what the real story is. We can also do interactive programs with children, with families. That's what we want to do because there is nothing to replace that personal contact and that knowledge in your gut that these are good people to their core. And that will upend any allusion to any type of fake news or otherwise if you take the time to meet these people. And that is the key as to where I invite President Trump. He hasn't actually spent time with refugees. And I think if he did, he would feel very differently about how everything is being implemented. So definitely go to irisct.org, and we will make it happen in your community, however you would like to meet refugees or to have IRIS staff come speak to whatever group you have. And that's the most powerful way to get involved.
Well, thank you so much for your extremely important work and for fighting the good fight on the behalf of a worthy project and the people, most importantly, that you're working with and helping to save families from fates we don't like to often think about here in this country, but must. And thank you so much, and have a great holiday weekend. I know our discussion tonight really does relate to the American dream and to the ideals that many of us hold dear about our country. And thanks for focusing attention on that as we enter the July 4th holiday. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you very much. And I hope that everybody thinks of what's at the base of the Statue of Liberty when they think about the 4th of July tomorrow. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Ann. We'll stay in touch. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. That's Ann O'Brien, Director of Community Engagement with Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services, otherwise known as IRIS, of New Haven, Connecticut. Again, their website is irisct.org.